Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Peterson Car Stories Podcast. My name is Patrick, and this is my co-host, Daniel. Say hi, Daniel.
Hello, everyone.
And today, we have got ourselves a very cool interviewee.
Oh.
Oh, yes. She is a stunt car driver. She's worked the likes of F1 teams, musical talent, and she's just generally overall cool as hell. So introducing none other than Bette Haycoop. How are you doing today, Bette?
Oh my God, hi. Thank you for that gorgeous intro.
Oh, of course. It's my job. I got to butter everybody up so they like us for the rest of the hour.
Well, you're doing great.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here, by the way.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Oh my God, it's my pleasure. This is amazing.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, we brought you in because cool stunts. Tell everybody about cool stunts.
Cool stunts. Yeah, I mean, I guess to give you a little bit more about me, I am kind of like a newly minted stunt driver. So my path was not always cars, always stunts. I worked in tech before this, recruited like computer vision engineers and software engineers. So I was more in like the tech side. But stunts is something that I wanted to do since I was a little kid. I watched The Italian Job and it forever changed me. I'm sure many listeners can relate to that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, when I saw that, I thought like, oh, this is really cool. I didn't know that it was a job. I just said, oh, I really want to do something like this with a car. And so I told myself when I was older, I would train for it.
Did you want a Mini too?
Of course. Of course. It's still on my list. My car right now is an MG.
Nice.
A little 73 MG.
Cool.
But yeah, when I basically, I mean, there's kind of like a side story of when I got my first car. It was just like a 2006 Mazda 3, very sensible vehicle. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to go rip around behind my local Walmart and just teach myself stunts because I saw this movie. It's 4 years later. I have my own car. I can just do this, right? Mm-hmm. So I went out and I completely made my tires bald, like totally bald. First week I had, I was like, what's going to happen if I just rip the e-brake and do this? When I got home, my dad was like, oh my gosh, something's wrong with your car. And I'm like, why? He's like, your tires are bald. I didn't even understand what that could do to the tires of my car. So I decided later I would actually, you know, get trained and do this properly. And I grew up in Whittier. So it's kind of like a suburb of LA. So I've been out here for a while. And I said, you know what? I'll do this later. And then I kind of let life happen where I did everything everyone told me I was supposed to do. I got the good job. I went to school. I did the things. And eventually I found myself being super just unhappy. I was like, this isn't it for me. Mm-hmm. And I did some soul searching and the thing that kept coming up was stunt driver. And so this was literally like two summers ago, which is wild. And I felt like a crazy person because who's 30 and decides that they're going to become a stunt driver? Mm-hmm. But I said, you know what? Let's give this a go. Life is short. So went out, got trained, and it was something that made my brain so happy. I remember we were doing like a simulation chase scene. There were like 12 cars and it was all choreographed. And I was like laughing and crying because I was so, so happy to be there and to be doing that. But I knew no one and nothing. And I basically,
sorry. Fun fact, Bette is great friends with Luna, a previous guest of ours.
Yes.
Last season.
She's great.
Last season.
Go check it out.
Go check it out. It's a great story. I don't have the sick Italian accent, but, so yeah, I think once I kind of leaned into that and decided it was time to actually, you know, take this seriously, I knew no one and nothing. And a lot of the time with stunts, like the first things that you're doing are you're kind of just like driving straight on camera, right? At 25 miles an hour. But I found myself the first gig I got to go on being on set, I was sat there and I was like, you know what? I feel like I belong here. This is really, really cool. And so from that, I've been able to do a bunch of other cool stuff. I think as far as stunts go, like my favorite is a 360.
Which
I can show you guys the video of that later. Yeah. But that is like my absolute favorite. And so doing stuff with TV and movies is the goal. But right now I'm just like getting my chops together, doing music videos, commercials, that kind of thing. But when it comes to actually like stunts, you're like, your question, like, let's talk about cool stunts. Mm-hmm. I think just understanding like the way that you can manipulate and control a vehicle to do something that looks out of control, like on a dime for the sake of like precision and, mm-hmm. you know, doing something to a camera, is just so cool. So it's a long answer to your question, but
I mean, that was a great answer. Yeah.
Long, but great.
Yeah.
What are some of the projects you worked on? If you can mention.
Yeah. I can't talk about some of them because okay. again, they're obviously not out yet. But, one of the first things I got to do was a Verizon commercial, which was really sick.
Cool. What were you driving?
I was definitely driving a like 16 seater passenger van,
okay.
which was really cool.
What did you do with that?
We were out in the desert, getting some driving shots.
Okay.
But the thing that was really cool is I got to work with, a camera that again, I was realistic when I came into this and I said, okay, like I don't have all the connections. I didn't grow up in this. I don't know anybody. So there's things that I thought were unrealistic for me to do early on. Mm-hmm. And I got to work on this camera with this camera that is essentially a camera that's on a crane attached to a car. And I thought it would probably be at least 5 years before I'd get to work on a set of that caliber. And that was literally the first thing I got to do. So choreographing with the driver of the camera car was so valuable. It was absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. Because again, I didn't really know like anyone. All I had was my imagination. And so I would take time in the morning and think about what it would feel like to be on set and who would be on set and what it would feel like and where the camera would be. And I had this moment in my first couple of gigs where I saw basically what I saw in my backyard happen in front of me. Mm. And so this whole like, there's this crazy power of like being able to really, really focus in on something that you want and then being able to see it happen. I felt like I had magical powers. like for example, I knew having like racing training was really awesome for stunts, just to show that you can manipulate a car at a higher speed and have that under your belt. And I had no idea where to start. I have that thought and I kid you not, an hour later, I'm sat on an airplane next to one of the people who owns Skip Barber, which is like mm-hmm. one of the best racing schools. Mm-hmm. And through building that relationship, I got to go to that racing school, which was so sick.
Nice.
So it was really kind of like one of those things where I feel like I just kind of finally let go. Like I felt like I was controlling so much in my life up until that point. And I basically was just like, all right, it's time to let go. And the people that I've been able to meet and the opportunities that I've been able to have been really, really awesome. So yeah, that's again.
Often when you go into a project like day of, do you really like get mentally prepared? It sounds like you kind of do and just kind of like visualize how it's going to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's part like visualizing or practicing, you know, if you have to do an actual stunt, there's more preparation leading up. Mm-hmm. But as far as where my head's at, mm-hmm. I feel like it's part knowing what the job is and getting that done and preparing myself and be like, okay, make sure that I get these shots or I pay attention in these ways. And then it's part like just going with the flow and understanding that every plan that's made could completely change. So I think for me, it's more mentally preparing for whatever is about to happen when I get yeah. in the car and when I get to set. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a good question.
Thank you. No, I'm kidding. So what was your first automotive memory that you could think of?
Mm. Oh my goodness. My first automotive memory. Oh, I'll tell you. So I love like classics, love classics. And I, when I was, I think I was about six, and I would be in the back seat. My mom would be driving and I drove past, there was a neighbor that was selling this. And in my head, now looking back, it might've been like a Chevy pickup from the late 60s and it was banana yellow.
Nice.
And I begged her, please let me buy, like, can you buy that car for me? And I'll pay you back when I have a job. I was like, please buy that car for me. This is what I want. Mm-hmm. She didn't do it, but she had other things to worry about, you know, food, housing. But that was one of like the first times where I think I saw a car that I was like, whoa, that doesn't look like any other car I've seen. And I want that. Like I see myself in this car. And I had to have been about like 6 or 7, something like that.
Okay. And you grew up in Whittier, you mentioned?
I did.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Is that where you were born as well?
I was born in Whittier. Oh, yeah.
SoCal.
Born and raised. Yeah. Yeah.
We don't get too many born Southern Californians.
We don't have like any of them. Yeah. Think about it, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. The holidays here are quite quiet.
Yeah.
Because everyone goes home. Right?
Yeah.
Like the
city. Pretty much, yeah.
The city gets really, really quiet. Yeah. No one's ever from LA.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. What you're saying now. Oh.
Yeah.
I was like, wait.
Come on, Patrick.
Okay.
Everyone goes home to wherever they're from.
Yes. Ohio gains like 400,000 overnight. It's
there
crazy.
You go. Yes, exactly. Yeah. All the airports everywhere are like, no.
Yeah. No, it's great. I love holiday traffic, you know, also being born and raised in Southern California. So.
Oh, yeah. You're from here as well?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He's from Orange County.
Shut up, Daniel.
Well, to be fair, I mean, like Whittier is the furthest east you can get in LA County without it being Orange County. Like the backyard or like over the back wall is basically Orange County. So I don't typically say that I'm from LA because I could see downtown from some places around the city, but like we never went, like ever.
Yeah.
It was just never a thing.
Same. I mean, I'm from Seal Beach, which is the next town over from Long Beach. So it's the most western point of Orange County.
You guys got the 605 connection.
I do the 605 connection.
Oh, hey.
That is correct.
We know what the 605 is.
The 605. My grandmother lived in Arcadia. Like, I'm all too familiar with that.
Nice. Yeah. No, Whittier's in like, I call it the Bermuda Triangle of freeways because no matter where you are stood in Whittier, it'll take you 20 minutes to get to a freeway. Like if you look at a map of Whittier, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's old school town for sure.
Very old school.
Pre highway construction.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But there's a huge, like, there's like a lot of classic cars in Whittier. Like it's kind of like a 50s town. There's like a big rockabilly vibe. There's a big like low rider culture. And it's all like cruising Whittier Boulevard was like such a thing. Like I have friends who
still is a thing. I've seen the event come up a few times and I've never gotten to it, sadly. But
oh, you gotta go. You gotta go. My friend's parents legit met there.
Oh, that's adorable. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's cute.
It is pretty cool, yeah. Been enough Whittier talk.
Yeah.
I mean, Seal Beach talk now, because I grew up Seal Beach, very strong amount of culture, because it's just, we have the classic car show every year. It's right on PCH. It's,
of course.
That's where I grew up the same way. You see one car and then it's over.
Yeah.
See, your car was that classic 60s pickup.
Yeah.
Mine was a 2004 F430. So
wait, what?
Yeah, it was 2004 F430.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm a young lad, but what was your awakening car, Daniel?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know this one.
It's a Viper.
It's a Viper. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, first, yeah. Very classic. Yeah. That's
early,
amazing.
Mid 90s. So.
Did you have the Hot Wheels first?
I had the diecast. So
you had the thick one.
Yeah, the big
fancy.
One.
Fancy.
Had to unscrew it from the stand.
Okay.
So. Oh, my parents get so mad I screw the cars off of stands.
Yeah.
Like you're ruining the value. I was like, I'm 4. How do I know what value means?
But it was
the but your motor skills are great. You could
the motor skills are fantastic.
You could unscrew a car.
I mean, yeah, I could do all sorts of
a plastic bit. That's great.
Now so what's in your current car lineup right now?
Okay, so my current car lineup. I always say that we're a 3-car, 1-car household.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a 1973 MG.
How did you acquire it? How long have you had it?
Oh my gosh, this is actually a really good story. So
you're in the right place then.
let me tell you. So I went to a Cars and Coffee with a friend in Griffith Park and I saw an MG and I don't think I ever saw one in person before. I was like, oh man, this car is so cool. Like, oh, I was talking to the owners. And then I looked up what they cost, you know, like what is the going rate for these? Like, what's a good year? You know, just kind of like deep dove into research.
Mm-hmm.
Found one on Bring a Trailer. That was a Sunday. By Wednesday, I won the bid and owned the car.
Very nice.
But in that period of time, I like looked up, you know, it's a great first car to have. Like parts are relatively cheap and easy to find.
Mm-hmm.
It is, the engine had been partially rebuilt, like, I don't know, 7 years before I bought it. So it was in great operating condition. you know, it has a whopping 89 horsepower. So
very nice.
It's perfect for cruising. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does have like, it's a convertible, but I'm never putting the top up. I don't live in California to drive with the top up on my car. So it stays covered for the rest of the time. But the craziest thing about this, besides the speed, two things, I guess. One is that the car's in Burbank. In Bring a Trailer, it can be literally anywhere. So I was prepared to walk in and be like, all right, where am I shipping this car from? Mm. I need to get it inspected, all these things. It was in Burbank.
Perfect.
At the time.
Did you not see that when you're clicking bid?
No, I did. Oh, okay. I did. But that's like, it's just kind of wild.
Oh,
just, like,
it was meant to be.
Yeah,
it was
right. Meant to be. Divided adventure at that point.
Because I was finding ones that were like rusted out in like Chicago, like anywhere in the north. And it's like, ooh, don't really want to buy
a car from the north.
Yeah, for sure. So that's what I was hearing. So my friend drove it home for me because at the time I didn't know how to drive stick.
That's ironic.
Let that sit in. Let that sit in.
Okay.
So I would take myself out in this car at like 5 a.m. on a Saturday and just drive around and practice stalling out in the middle of like Jefferson and La Cienega, because I just knew visually I needed to get used to driving on these roads. And so I refined my skills from there. But because I mentioned I worked in tech, I had, and this is my financial irresponsibility, but I had a little, like I had stock there and I'd taken it out when I left. And I had a friend the Wednesday morning I won the bid say, you know what, maybe just check, just see if there's anything left in that account. And I'm like, no, there's nothing there, I promise. Like, they're like, just check. And I go in, and when I tell you the dollar amount within $3 of what I won the bid for that afternoon was in the account that I forgot that I had and didn't know I had, like it was meant to be.
Yeah.
So I'm always like, well, the car was free.
You know, that's one way to look at it.
Yeah. It's a great way to look at it, honestly.
All right. I'm like, I'm meant to have this car, and the stuff that I've been able to do with it, and with Hot Shift, and we can talk about that. But I feel like it's again, anything about this path that I've decided to go on, like, I just feel like once I let go, really cool stuff started happening. So I don't know. That's how I found my MG.
Does
on
Bring
a Trailer. Oh, of course, Smidge.
Smidge.
Because its name is I mean, it's slightly problematic. But the model, like the actual car.
I forgot about MG.
It is British.
It is British.
It is British, and it was in the 70s, so it's a different time. So I call her Smidge.
Good taste though. Good British. Who doesn't like a good British car?
Yes.
I'm also a British car owner.
Oh, really? What car do you
have? How long was it broken for?
Does it drive?
It does drive. No, it does drive. It's just the brakes are kind of sketchy. It has a brake leak.
Oh my gosh.
The caliper.
Mine did too.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I've been lazy about getting it fixed. So
when did you discover that the brakes didn't work? Were you driving?
When I didn't drive it for 5 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Why did you drive it for 5 weeks, Dan?
Because we had a press car here. So I was driving it for, and I was just like, why not? You know, but yeah, that's what happens.
It's your daily driver?
Yeah, it likes to be driven a lot. And it, when it doesn't, when I just keep it there,
it tries to kill you.
Yeah.
It tries to kill you.
Several times it's done it. And I knew it was going to happen. I was just hoping this wasn't going to be the time, but sure enough. But it's a 91 Range Rover green, British green. Yeah.
Beautiful. Is the interior what I think
it's all original? I'm the second owner. I've had it for 10 years.
No way. Or 11
second years
now. Owner?
Yeah, I bought it from my best friend's family that bought it new.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, they bought it in 91. So, it was pretty much sitting for a couple years, but I've known the car. Basically, he was a triplet, and his sisters drove that car to high school. And he had a 2-door black Range Rover that we used to whip around in.
Where are you from again?
This was in Glendale. Lived in Glendale.
Oh, Glendale,
but
nice.
I grew up in Pasadena.
Right.
But yeah, so I know the British love hate.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I guess the rest of the cars that I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The rest meaning.
What are the other ones?
Yeah. I have a 2004 Crown Victoria. Mm. That's another story.
I saw you brought the mini version.
I did. How cute is that? I got this because, again, one of those times I was sitting in my backyard thinking, all right, here's what I need on a first stunt practice car, and mm-hmm. I have no idea how I'm going to get this. And these cars are, stunt schools really need them and like them because they're just so massive. And
was
you
it
can
a cop
really,
car?
So, yeah, it was.
Okay. Did you get it at like an auction or something?
Did I?
Or did you acquire it at an auction?
Well, Craigslist.
Oh, pretty much.
Might as well be, honestly. Yeah.
Kinda. Okay. So these cars are desirable for many reasons. They typically go for a couple grand, maybe two to four, depending if there's an interior, maybe five. This one does not have that. So it was used as a stunt car mm-hmm. on set. So I found all these like bullet casings in the car. Okay. It has no back seat. It has holes drilled in it from where cameras were mounted. They just drilled straight into the top of the car. And I found it in Long Beach and it ran perfectly. And the guy sold it to me for $800.
This must have been before COVID, I assume.
It was actually during.
Okay, so before the price surge.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I think the end of like 2021, maybe.
It's a perfect running and driving car for $800. Impossible.
And I drove it home from Long Beach.
Wow.
Impossible. I got in the death trap and I drove it home from Long Beach.
Probably very loud in there. You can imagine the lack of sound editing.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, everything rattles. There's like cover, you know, the covers on the doors are gone. Like it is very.
It's just shell.
It is very, yeah, it's cool. Very that. But yeah, then I decided with this whole like career that I wanted to really kind of make sure to be myself. And I told myself, like, I can be me and be a stunt driver, which is an absolute weirdo who likes glitter and, you know, like fun, weird things. And so on my birthday the next year, I had a bunch of paint out in my driveway and I had my friends who came to my birthday paint this car. So it looks insane. I did like rainbow stripe down the front all the way to the back. Someone did like one of those S's that you did in like school. Do you remember that with like the spiky top? Yeah, the three line, spiky top, spiky bottom. Someone did that on there, of course. There's like some sweet flames on the back. Someone drew like a garden on the roof. But yeah, it was important to me to kind of fuse in like the love of my friends visually to my car. And it looks bananas. And when I go practice with it, it's like, it just makes me smile.
And where do you go practice?
I go out to Willow Springs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you drive it out there?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely. There's a limit to what I am willing to do.
Okay. Have you done any modifications to the Crown Vic to make it easier to stunt with? Or is it pretty much just chucking the car around?
I know that I will be getting a hydraulic braking system.
I was about to ask, do you have a hydro brake?
Because that is so necessary. But in the meantime, while I'm figuring everything out, I literally have just like a stock e-brake in there.
That's impressive.
So it works basically. They have these little clamps that you could like metal clamps that you could put on the actual, like you get under the car and put like this little clamp around the wire and shorten it because it gets, when you're jamming the e-brake all the time to do a stunt,
the tension disappears.
The tension just like, bleh, yeah. So it looks like a Christmas tree underneath my car from all of the hanging little metal clamps. But it does its job. There's a lot that you could do with or without a working e-brake. Sometimes it's a little touchy. So still figuring that out. Thinking if I want to actually put the money into this car or put it into a different car. So including like a roll cage and things like that. But yeah, these are on the list. Ooh, making it
death proof.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
So
no passengers allowed though. So I can't live the full death proof fantasy.
Wouldn't that be nice?
And what's the name of this Crown Vic?
Oh my God. Thank you for asking the name. Her name is Lollipop.
Okay.
It's a fantastic name.
I call the little one, thank you. I call the little one Sucker because it's a smaller version of a lollipop.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So when I'm away from Lollipop or I can't be out driving Lollipop, I'm playing with Sucker.
Do you always carry Sucker around?
No. Okay. Sucker lives on a shelf in my house and Sucker comes down eventually to play and bug my cats. I'm taking Sucker around Peterson today.
Oh, of course. Thanks for bringing it.
Yeah.
How does one practice for stunt driving?
Yeah.
Because it's not really something you can just go like, all right, on today's list, I'm going to do this, this, that, and that. I can imagine it's a little more freestyle than that, a little more freeform.
It can be. I think there are things that so there are stunts that are ones that you just always want to have in your bag and you always want to be like fresh with. And those are like sliding 90s, 180s, like things that are, or 45s, like things that are just like, you just want to lose the traction on the back wheels and be able to kind of place a car. So I have a bunch of cones because cones are key when you're practicing stunts. Go out to Willow Springs. They have a big skid pad. So you got to rent time on the skid pad. So this isn't something that like you can do all the time, because you have to actually like rent the space to do it. But I just block out several hours and like rain or shine. Sometimes it's like 110 degrees out there. I just get done as much as I possibly can. And temperature also affects what you can do and the grip. Like, you know, obviously if it's warmer, the tires want to like hold on to the asphalt more. And so it's good to kind of go in different seasons. But yeah, I get my cones out and I typically allow myself a period of time to really just kind of warm up. And with that, I mean, sliding 45, sliding 90s, 180s. 180s are also really fun. Like reverse stunts are some of my favorite stunts. There's just something about it. But yeah, I basically do think ahead of time, like what do I want to practice today? And then I just kind of allow myself towards the end of the day, like a little time to just mess around, and just push like the limits of this car just to see like what I can do. But yeah, it's a lot of kind of setting up either a course for me or a path for me. Sometimes I'll make up a scene in my head, be like, oh, I'm going through this alleyway and I can't hit the wall. So like, how do I make sure I place the car properly? So it's a lot of visualization when it comes to practicing as well.
How many sets of tires have you gone through?
God, I don't even know.
Okay. Is it often that mm-hmm. you're, okay.
Mm. And where I live, there's a lot of like automotive shops. And so there's
get the used one.
There you go. Literally on the corner of my block is my used tire guy.
Okay.
So he's always on the lookout.
He already knows your size.
Yeah. He knows it all. So he helps me out, which is really cool. And then the last car is the everyday normal car,
which is
an Audi Q8. E-tron. I just went through like a whole thing of testing out. I think we tried 13 different cars. Basically, we'd get them for like the weekend or a week and like live our lives with the car. Be like, how does the range feel? Regenerative braking on electric cars is kind of bananas to get used to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Suspension is super tight on the cars as well. They're like really heavy cars. And so through all of that, the Audi Q8, just like, and we wanted an SUV because, mm-hmm. you know, you got to bring the homies with you.
Of course.
Wherever
always.
You go.
Yeah. Always. I don't know if I want a coupe ever, to be honest.
I know, but don't you?
I always do.
Okay.
I always need to have a four-door car at all times. If I have a coupe, I always need a four-door car.
Of course. Of course. Which is why, you know, I have the three-car, one-car household. Smidge is two doors. Lollipop kind of has
it's one
all
seat.
Its doors. Yeah. Barely one seat. It's mostly metal. but yeah, so I mean, and the Q8 is white on cream. So you feel like a diplomat driving around in that car.
Was this your like first experience with like electric cars? Because we usually ask people like, what's your take on EVs?
Yeah. But, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's your take now?
Oh
that,
my God.
Now being an owner.
I have so many takes. Yeah, I think electric is so important.
Mm-hmm.
I also was able to be embedded with Formula E, which is like the lightest, fastest single-seater racing series. It's fully electric. And I like that it gets people to think differently about how they approach automotive. I think it lends itself to having you be a more conscious person when it comes to like your impact. Obviously, a lot of what we're told is, you know, it's like, oh, well, make sure, you know, you turn the light switches off and all of this. And it's like, it's really like massive companies that are that are kind of ruining a lot of the environment, you know? Mm-hmm. But I like that it can actually, I don't know, there's just different considerations that you can make when you're looking at the EV space. For example, like Formula E, I think in a weekend, they use less than 200 tires, whereas Formula One uses closer to 1,000. And they've created a compound tire that's wet and dry. So they literally race on one tire. So it kind of relies more on the acumen of the driver, since a lot of the cars are built the same. There's like software modifications that you can make. So it makes for an exciting series. Also, there's no emissions. So there's no dirty air coming out of the back of the cars. So the racing is just like very intense. It's like really, really just very close racing, like the whole race through.
I've seen many FE races. They do get mad intense.
Like really intense.
Oh, yeah.
They're short. I want them to be longer, but they're mitigating like battery power, right?
Yeah, it's only like an hour long each, if you're lucky.
Yeah, exactly. But that's kind of wild, the speeds they're going at, like owning an electric now. But I think like I was looking at a lot of how like lithium is mined, obviously. Mm-hmm. And like, I was just like kind of chatting with someone about this last night, where it's like, at any point, I guess we have to just take stuff from, like when it comes to automotive, like the thought is you have to take something from the earth to do it. And so I'm curious about like hydrogen fuel cell, but then it's still, there's still emissions when you're, you know, kind of like creating that type mm-hmm. of fuel. So I don't know like what the solution is, but I think when it comes to EV, and especially living in LA, like the smog was so, so, so bad for a long time. And so they tightened up some legislation, but we were supposed to have EVs in LA in like
2030.
We were supposed to have them in like the late 90s. Like the same legislation that we're looking at now was the same legislation 25 years ago. But there's a whole like documentary on this.
Mm-hmm. We have one here, the EV one.
Yeah, you have the EV one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the rest of them are like destroyed.
There's only 40 left. The rest of them got scrapped because Big Oil said this is too dangerous to our money supply.
Exactly, mm-hmm. which is so wild. It's so, so wild. So that whole story is wild to me. And like so many people, I think I watched this a little bit ago, so I might not have the exact number here, but like something like 90% of people who are aged like 15 to 25 in the 90s in LA had like severe lung damage from the air.
Doesn't surprise
me. And so that's why the legislation was being introduced back then. And then, you know, GM comes out with this EV1. It's amazing. People love it. Yeah. Like I don't remember what the range was, but it's like a little coupe.
90 miles, yeah. Roughly.
Yeah, which is not a lot, but also in LA.
It's good enough for LA.
Yeah, it's good enough for LA. Mm-hmm. And so there's this incredible test case. So to me, I'm like, man, if we had had that all this time ago, like imagine the innovations that we could have had now.
You mentioned Formula E. So mm-hmm. what's your experience? It seems like you've been to...
I've been to three races. Okay. Yeah.
Which races?
Mexico City.
Okay.
Season opener. Iconic.
Okay.
I went to Portland, which is also really sick. Got to see the track up there.
Didn't you go with Tony?
I went with Tony.
Love Tony.
Yeah. The homie. Love her.
Previous guest.
Go back and listen to it.
Yeah. Oh, that was one of my favorite ones we recorded. That one could have gone on for 4 hours. We didn't stop it.
Yeah. She's an incredible podcast guest.
Incredible.
And just person.
Oh, yeah. That too. Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
No, she's brilliant.
I forgot you guys had a little party over here after that. That's right. Like all the girls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. We all came. Yeah. We all hung out. But yeah.
Just your experience with formerly.
Oh, yeah. And then London. London was, they race at the Excel, which is a convention center in East London. And it's literally part of the races inside.
That's
it goes
sweet.
Through the building.
Ooh, I've seen, yeah, I've seen, they also do that in Berlin at the Berlin E-Prix. They also like jet it through the, I can't remember what part of Berlin, but yeah, like there's just grandstands inside and the cars just fly by like 120. You're like, oh.
It is wild. And the cars have a different sound, right?
Yeah, but like a really high-pitched whir.
Yeah, it is. I think that was one of the coolest experiences. And like the teams are so awesome. There's 22 drivers, so it's a little bit more than like a Formula One. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you have previous like Le Mans winners, like endurance champs. Like there's the drivers have like really diverse backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting once you start to like get to know the drivers and the teams. And this is going to be its 10th season. So they've been around for 10 years. Like the amount of innovation that's happened in the past 10 years is bananas. And a lot of the things that they learn on the track then goes into the consumer electric vehicles, which I think is really, mm-hmm. really cool. And I know that I think Toyota is working now. This is aside from Formula E, but there's like a battery. It's supposed to last like over 700 miles.
Yes, I've heard of this technology.
Because people have a lot of like range anxiety when it comes to electric vehicles. I think that that's going to be really, really cool. I still want to research more, obviously, like how everything's made. But but yeah, I think that a lot of car companies have done a really incredible job. I think, of course, I would love for there to be more options that are in like a more affordable price range for people, because a lot of them are luxury cars, right? Like, and you know, Audi's definitely up there with that kind of range, not up like with a Lucid, but those cars are super cool too.
Oh, yeah. So cool.
The Porsche Taycan though was like my absolute favorite. That was the most fun to drive. Like they got it right.
Because they just electrified the Porsche formula. It still whips around like a 911, but then again, you're not blowing gas everywhere.
So. Exactly. I think it's a really interesting space to watch, and just the amount of like the fans for Formula E are also like really, really incredible. Like it's also more accessible to go to a race than other more like prestigious racing series. So you see a lot of like families and stuff. I don't know. It has a really, really cool vibe. And I enjoyed being able to go to these races. Nice. But yeah, that was super fun.
Do you follow any other motorsports or gone to any other races?
Yeah, I mean, F1.
Okay.
Follow F1. Yeah. Wildly was at the Abu Dhabi race at the end of 2021.
I was the race right before that one.
Yeah.
You were at the one right before?
I was at Saudi Arabia the weekend before.
No way.
I was,
yeah. Why?
Sorry, the viewers have heard this 100 times, but I was a guest of an influencer that was invited out there, and he needed a plus one. Somebody knew Formula One and would definitely like to travel to watch racing. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Didn't have no PTO, but I said, I'll take some days off.
You have to go.
I had to go. And like I told the bosses here, I was like, guys, I got this opportunity. Like, dude, go. Have fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was in Abu Dhabi in 2021. You know, with the infamous rear ending? That was in the greatest qualifying lap that never happened, when Max threw it into the wall at the final corner, the most screamer of a lap I'd ever seen.
Insane.
Seeing that live, just watching that crash happen, just you just feel your heart drop into your toes. Yeah. Just like, bro, no. As a Max fan, I was just like, no.
You just like couldn't imagine.
I couldn't. It was a horror story, honestly. But it was the best weekend of my life.
As a Lewis fan, Miami I was happy.
Oh, so you're a Mercedes Lewis fan? Okay.
Definitely.
Hey.
Do you want to leave?
He's almost at 200 podiums.
200 podiums.
Almost.
Yeah,
no, 196.
Try 10 wins in a row.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He got
the podium again.
I get really passionate.
I feel like, it's interesting with like the records and everything. I think we're going to keep seeing this with all the different records that are held with Formula One, but the cars are just so different.
Oh yeah.
Like if any driver got in a car from, you know, 20 years ago, it would just be so different, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and the safety alone.
Yeah.
They find themselves alive after a race. That's
exactly.
Crazy.
That's bananas, just right?
Look what happened to Stroll this weekend.
Oh my gosh.
That crash would have ended anybody's life pre-current registration.
Oh, yeah. 100%. That car
was, yeah. I think they were like, he didn't race because I think they couldn't get the car back together. There's no way.
Then they just turned into a fall guy.
They just said, he's still hurt.
Lance isn't feeling well.
Yeah.
The car is in pieces. The car is in pieces.
It's like, he's not feeling well. The car isn't feeling well.
Because I was watching that live and they like literally brought out the new chassis. And I think they're just like, there's no way we're going to do this overnight.
They have to salvage parts for the old stuff because it penalizes the driver and the team if you have to take new parts. So
right.
It's their job to scrape out what's usable.
Oof.
And don't think there's much usable at that point.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, that got smashed up pretty bad.
That was rough wreck, dude.
Yeah, I saw a video of like a fan who was right above it. And it was like, whoa.
Some crazy velocity on that one.
Crazy. With the sound on too, it was like, but those barriers really do their job.
Oh, yeah. They do. Fantastic. Wouldn't it be a race without it?
No.
Any race, anywhere.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah.
Unlike George's. Okay.
That was
let me tell you, the size of that smile that grew onto my face in watching that happen.
That was crazy.
I do not actively prey on the Mercedes downfall, but I do enjoy it.
I'm sure you do.
That was like his rookie year when they called him up and he like was like second or he was leading and he got in another crash.
No, that wasn't his fault. His tires.
That was like two seasons
ago.
They
screwed up his strategy.
Yeah.
Which that was before Dark Russell became a thing. Now it's just Dark George. He went from the sweet little boy striving to be the greatest to like the man on top looking down among below people. It's like, damn, you used to be cool. Yeah. That's my hot take for the evening.
I haven't, yeah, I'm not fully aware of that storyline, but we could talk more about that after this.
I love gossiping about F1 drivers. It's a hobby of mine.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
Not trying to shift gears here, no pun intended.
Oh my God.
But
that was great. Made her edit in like a buttons right there. Thanks.
Shift those gears.
Yeah, so you have an interesting series.
Oh my God, it's a double pun.
It is.
Good job.
It is.
Can you share? What is it?
Yeah, so I... yes, I can share. So I created a show called Hot Shift.
Mm-hmm.
It was born out of finding myself at a lot of car events and noticing that people who didn't look like everybody else were typically on like the outskirts of the event, right? Mm-hmm. So I would obviously go up and be like, hey, like, what's going on? Why are you here? There was always a hesitation because sometimes, and this isn't for everybody, I'm not saying this is everyone, but mm-hmm. like a good amount of time can get grilled if you don't appear to look like you belong.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you here? Mm-hmm. What do you think of these very technical components on this car? Where's your dad? So I can ask him questions about this car, even though it's your car, you know, I'm giving you real experiences.
Yeah. Oh, that's so gross.
Oh yeah. So, and it happens like to this day. Yeah. So I had just gotten this car. I learned to drive stick and I was like, you know what? I can just teach you. Like, it's not that wild, right? And so what started happening is I noticed, like, once someone learns stick, also learning stick is like, if you weren't no one like taught you growing up, or maybe like someone tried and it didn't go well, like there's a lot that you bring into this, like coming mm-hmm. and sitting in the driver's seat with me. And so everyone's like driving stick within the first like 5 minutes, right? Like mm-hmm. getting into first. And by no means is this car the easiest car to get into first gear.
Yeah.
So by the end, you're pretty good at driving stick.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed like the confidence level in people going up, and I would get texts later in the week like, hey, like I felt like super confident from this weekend. So I did this thing at work. Like it was actually something else was happening, right? Mm. I was like, oh, this is something, this is cool. So I started recording it and calling it Hot Shift
mm-hmm.
because I don't know if you can cuss, but by the end, we yes. feel like hot shit.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been holding back. So it's good
no,
to know.
I mean, like we'd appreciate it if you didn't, but like we're no strangers to it.
Okay. Yeah. It's part of the title. So I will give you that.
Yeah, no, go for it.
And it also just kind of sounds, if you say it fast, it kind of sounds yeah. like hot shit. You're like, yeah. what did you say?
Yeah.
So hot shit is, basically, it's like part interview show, part manual transmission lesson. And I decided to put people in the driver's seat that we don't usually see, that, mm-hmm. you know, the car stuff isn't really marketed towards, but are enthusiasts or mm-hmm. interested or whatever. It's just, there's no real bridge. So I always call myself like the non-car person's car person, because I like to create kind of that like gateway into cars. And being a car person there's no like one definition. And I think that there's a lot of things that people can bring into it or that's mirrored to them that isn't necessarily, I think, like the texture of the car community. And so it's my goal to show that. And yeah, I've been doing it for a year, done 21 episodes.
Nice.
I'm looking at figuring out season 2 and expanding and looking at like sponsorship for certain episodes. Tap, tap. And yeah, it's I've been able to have anyone from like musical artists to celebrity stylists to actors. I had a woman who's now my friend, and she was the first Asian female character on Call of Duty.
Huh.
Like she's a video game character.
That's cool.
Which is so sick. So yeah, it's been such an incredible like journey to kind of be able to share that and watch just the community that's come out of it. And I mm-hmm. think it like, it kind of touches on, you know, I love a good interview. Mm-hmm. And I also love like doing stuff. So being able to watch someone be like vulnerable or like talk about like their journey, because I don't think anyone gets from like point A to point B easily
mm-hmm.
in their careers or whatever they're doing. And being able to do that while they're like killing an engine and feeling maybe a little embarrassed about it is mm-hmm. like, is really fun to watch and so awesome to like, be able to see someone that maybe you relate to in the driver's seat. And so, yeah, I have this moment called You Killed It. So the first time they kill the engine, I stop and I'm like, all right, you killed it. Like, tell me the last time you killed it at doing something, right?
Mm. That's fun.
And yeah. So it shifts the mentality because you could feel very like, oh, this is going to be bad. To like, oh yeah, wait, like, okay, here's something that I'm good at or that I just did that was amazing. Either, you know, this incredible red carpet I built or like the eggs I made this morning, whatever it could be, you know? And it just shifts kind of like your brain chemistry into being like, all right, let's get back into this. We can do this. But yeah, I need to do a compilation video of all the You Killed It moments because they're great, really this fun.
It's an awesome, wholesome idea. I love that.
It's so, pretty fun.
So I was actually teaching, I haven't done it for a little bit, but teaching the staff here how to drive stick with one of the cars up in a parking lot.
Worst instructor of all time. Just bullied me.
I was gonna
You got heckled.
What I was going to say is, how can Patrick sign up to be on one here?
Yeah, that knew that was coming. I can drive
stick. Knocked him up on me.
I can drive stick. Like I said, it's really hard to learn when you be rated the whole time.
Oh my God. See, that's like, okay, so I like to show that, you know, anyone can do it. And, just do it in like a fun environment where we're silly and laughing. And, you know, while we're doing that, like talking about just like wild moments and their journeys and how it's all like, to me, it's like about like the story of becoming. Apparently it's relatable content because of everything I've shared with you so far, like being on this whole journey myself. But I've always found that bit to be interesting. And I think like being able to like show someone and teach them a skill that has traditionally been like very gendered, I think is really, it's really powerful. And yeah, I don't know. I like being able to not take it so, so seriously and like subvert kind of that seriousness of you're going to kill my clutch, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, you're going to, okay. Once again, the parts are kind of cheap for this car. I'm fully aware of that going into this. So. Totally. And luckily nothing terrible has happened. So there
cars
you go.
Break.
Cars break. That's all part of the process.
They do because you drive them.
Exactly.
And you
exactly.
teach people things. But yeah, that's Hot Shift.
Awesome.
Sounds awesome.
Well, I'm not done yet.
Well, I have a meeting in like 15 minutes, relax.
All right.
I do too. But what's next for you? What do you want to do? I mean, that's obviously you want to expand a little bit on stunt driving, I believe.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So that is continuing to kind of expand my network there, getting more time in the seat on camera. Ultimately, like, I'm just a weirdo and I want to like drive in music videos for drag queens and like, you know, and like pop stars and stuff. Like, all of that is like a community that I like love and want to continue to like bridge between car culture and like other creative expressions. So doing that is a huge priority. I'm also very curious about learning to stunt drive electric cars. Just because the control is a little bit different and the speeds and the input are crazy on these cars. Like there's no gears. So you're just going, right?
Electricana was crazy to watch.
Oh my God. Wasn't that beautiful?
It was incredible. It's funny because like you said, electric car, you could throw it in you could throw it forward and backwards. And he's going like reverse, like 120, then just goes into forward and then the tires just change, no problem.
Yeah.
Only thing,
transmission doesn't blow up.
Transmission doesn't blow because there is none. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
That was really beautiful.
It was the best choreographed tuning video I've ever seen.
Honestly, I fully agree with you. Yeah. And I mean, it was like $8 million car or something like that.
Yeah. Like an $8 million Audi custom EV maniac.
Yeah. That was amazing. So, you know, driving that is probably on the vision board. but yeah, being able to expand, also Hot Shift. And like I said, I'm going into season two and I feel like, I don't know, I see like a really cool series future for that show. And then just making some of my own, content and my own, I don't know. I just want to continue to show like all the facets of the car community, all the little niche places and people that are out there. Like, I just went to this place called Electric Classic Cars and it's in Wales in the UK and they convert like classics to electric that otherwise like, you know, they could be your daily driver. They stay on the road forever.
Yeah.
So there's just so much, I think, to the car space that I've discovered in the past couple of years and being kind of like an outsider looking in. And so I think being able to really kind of shine a light on all those little facets of stuff that is in the works for me and in the mix.
So if people want to learn more about you or follow you, how can they do that? Where can they find you?
You're amazing. So my Instagram is stunt with bet. And then YouTube is the same. Mm. And you can see all the hot shift there, hotshiftwithbet.com.
What's your actual website's name called?
I love that you asked. My website is beatbeatbitch.com.
I saw that and I was like, this is the greatest pun I've ever seen. Like, this is great.
Because I will say that while I'm driving, like, yeah. Beep, beep, bitch. So my friend was like, that should be your website. Yeah. I was like, you're right. But yeah, thank awesome. You. Thank you guys so much for making me feel you. So welcome. This is awesome.
No, thanks for giving us undoubtedly one of the greats of our recording time so far. So thank you so much for being here.
I had such a good time.
Good, good. Anyways, well, we'd like to thank everybody here for listening to another episode of the Peterson Car Stories podcast. Thank you, Bet, for coming again. You guys all take care. Don't forget to leave us a thumbs up or a 5-star. Or just leave any comments, concerns, feedback. We want to hear it all. Thanks again for listening to the True Car Stories podcast. Thank you so much. Take care, everybody.